Okay, our good afternoon, everybody. Now we're ready to learn. Here we go. This week's Parsha, we got Parsha Shlach. Parsha Shlach, of course, is, I don't say the word famous, but is all about the Meraglim, the episode of the sending of the spies to scout out the land of Israel. The Jewish people are now at the threshold of the land. And they make the decision, which of course turns out to be a disastrous decision to send the spies. The spies, of course, return with 10 of the 12 with an evil report. And eventually the Jews wander for 40 years instead of entering into the land. There is much to talk about this entire episode. What I'd like to learn with you this afternoon is the origins of this decision to send the spies. It is well discussed, well documented amongst all of the commentators that there are two different times that the Torah records this episode. Once here in our parsha, in Parsha Shlach, and the Torah again records it in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, where Moshe goes through a little bit of a review right before he dies. In the weeks leading up to his death, he sort of reviews the previous 40 years of Jewish history through the desert, and he rebukes them, and he chastises them, and he points certain thing out. And amongst his discussion there, he also recounts this story. And the commentators address the issue that the story is told to us from two different perspectives and told to us in two different ways, very different ways, regarding one very particular point, and that is the origin of this mission. And I'd like to learn that aspect with you this afternoon. Let's learn it together. And I want to share the approach of Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. It's a beautiful approach. We'll touch on Rashi as a different approach as well, which is often quoted to understand this idea. So first, get into it. Let's learn. So we're going to learn a few psukim from Parsha Shlach, which is our Parsha, and then we'll learn a few psukim from Sefer Devarim, and then I'd like to share with you what the Rav Hirsch has to say about them. Our parsha begins, what's right in front of you on your screen, at the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, Parsha Shlach, it's on the top of your screen, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Hashem speaks to Moshe saying, now very often that phrase, whenever we come across that phrase, we sort of run right by it. It appears numerous times in the Torah, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Hashem spoke, and whatever, Hashem spoke to Moshe. But here's actually critical to note that the beginning of our parsha is a conversation between Hashem and Moshe, that what's about to follow was spoken by Hashem to Moshe. And you'll see in a moment why that becomes so relevant. What does Hashem say to Moshe? Shlach lecha anashim, send out men v'yaturu et eretz Kenan, and they will spy out the land of Kenan, Asher Anino Tein Levnei Yisrael, which I'm about to give to the Jewish people. You will send out one person from each shevet, from each tribe, kol nasi bahem, and each person that you send has to be a leader, a person of stature, a person of distinguished character, has to be the one that is sent. Okay, what are the salient points that we get from this pasuk? So number one, we have a command from Hashem to Moshe to send out men who are going to spy out the land. We are told how many will be sent, which is, of course, 12, one per tribe. And the third point that we get is the quality of the person who's going to be sent. So that it has to be a person of prestige. Now, we take most of these things for granted. We're so familiar with the story of the sending of the spies. We know there were 12. We know that they were important people. But we'll keep this in mind as we go through this story of the salient points that when Hashem commands Moshe to send the people, it is A, he gives them a number, 12, one per tribe. He gives them a quality of who needs to be sent, and that is called Nasi Bahem. He also uses the word, and we're going to get back to this, when he says to spy, you know, there are different words, like many things, many concepts, both in any language, there are many words which define the same concept. Let's just say, you know, to talk. We have a conversation, we have dialogue, we have conversing, just thinking of, you know, a speech, a class. There's so many different ways to convey the message that one person is talking to another, yelling, screaming, soothing. All of those words, in essence, describe one person using their words to another. And there are dozens, if not hundreds, of different words because depending on the word that you use conveys a completely different idea of how and why I am speaking to you. So too in the idea of spying out the land, there are a number of different words that are used. And Hashem uses the word v'yasuru, or v'yaturu et eretz Kenan. So we'll see that as well. Okay, that's the one line of the command. That is what Hashem speaks to Moshe. That's it. Send people, 12 of them, important people. Next pasuk gimel towards the bottom of your screen. Vayishlach osam Moshe mimidbar Paran al pi Hashem. So Hashem, Moshe sent them al pi Hashem based on the word of what Hashem told them to do. Kulam an Hashem Rashi ben Yisrael. And who did he send? The people he was supposed to send. Men who were leaders of their tribe, not the actual leaders of their tribe. We read last week, when the Mishkan was inaugurated, the actual tribal leaders each came forward with an offering that they brought. So these are not the same people as their names are listed, very clearly different people. But they were of the leadership of each tribe. And the Torah tells us who they were. Elish Mosam, here are their names. And the Torah tells us for the tribe of Reuven, for the tribe of Shimon, and Yehuda, and Yisachar, and Ephraim, which we'll of course note Ephraim there in Pasuk Chet, is Hoshea bin Nun, the tribe of Binyamin. All 12 are listed. The Torah then says, Elish Mosam, Hashem, Shoshlach, Moshe, Soros, Haaretz. Here are the names of the men that Moshe had sent to scout out the land. Vayikra Moshe leHoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. And we of course also have the renaming of Hoshea, and he gets the name Yehoshua. And they are sent, and what we'll see a little bit later, Moshe gives them instructions, what exactly they're supposed to do, what they're supposed to look for as they go into the land. That is the way that our parsha begins, and of course the rest of the parsha discusses their actual trip, and how they returned, and what they said, and the people's reactions, all of that goes in. But in terms of why they went, a simple reading of our parsha would be Hashem commands Moshe to send them, tells them how many, and what kind of people need to go. All of that is in our parasha. Put that all on hold for one moment, and let's jump to Sefer Devarim. It's now on your screen in front. This is the first chapter in Sefer Devarim. Moshe begins, as I mentioned earlier, with a quick review. It's a little bit of a veiled rebuke. He chastises the Jewish people, and he discusses many different things. Amongst the things that he says, we'll begin here in Pasuk Chaf on the top of your screen. Va'omar alechem, I said to you, we've come now to the hills of the Emori, which is right on the border. We're on the border. Look, Hashem has given you the land. Go take it. It's time. Look, Moshe says he's at the end of his life. We were now here. We were at the border ready to go, except something happened before we went. And what was that? That's in Pasuk Chaf Beis here in the top of your screen. Vatikravun Eli Kulchem. You all came to me, Vatomru, and you said, Nishlecha Anashim Lefaneinu, let us send men before us, V'yachperulonu Es Haaretz, and they are going to spy out the land, V'yashivu Osanu Davar, and they will bring back word to us, which route we should follow and which cities we should come to. Says Moshe, in recounting, this is now 40 years later, he's reviewing what took place, and he's very clear, where did the idea come from that we need to send spies? Pasuk is exceptionally clear. Moshe says, we're on the boat, go, take it. Except you came to me, he says to the people. You came to me and said, we need to send men before us to spy out the land. Moshe then says, Vayitav beinai adavar, that was very pleasing in my eyes. I thought it was a good plan. Ve'ekach mikem shnei masar anashim, and I took 12 of your men, one from each tribe. Now, based on that pasuk, how many people did the people want to send when they said to Moshe, we need to send people? How many? Seems like there was no number. They didn't say. Moshe says, when he said, I responded to you and I sent 12. I came up with that number. The people themselves didn't seem to have any particular number in mind. They just wanted to send spies. However many are necessary, whatever it takes to do the job is what they had in mind, and Moshe sends the 12. Here's where our problem comes in, which should be very obvious at this point. What exactly happened here? In our parsha, in Parsha Shlach, Hashem commands Moshe to send them. Yet, when Moshe recounts this story, he doesn't mention anything about Hashem commanding him to send the people. Here the story is presented as if the people asked for this, and Moshe agreed, and sent them. So was it a command of Hashem like our parsha, or was it the people's request that Moshe agreed to? This is the problem that the commentators grapple with. I'd like to share Rav Hirsch's approach. I just want to introduce it really with Rashi. Rashi has a little different approach. It's often quoted, and you may have heard different bits and pieces of this approach over the years. So let me just at least acknowledge Rashi's approach as follows. Rashi learns that in our parsha, I'm now switching your screen back to Parsha Shlach. In our parsha, Rashi says, the key is the opening phrase of Shlach Lecha, which I'm highlighting with my pointer on your screen. Send for you, men. And Rashi understands that to mean that this is something which you can do. I put it on the side of your screen on the right-hand side, if you can see that. I'm not sure if you do. If you minimize the pictures of everybody else's faces, you should see that on the side of your screen right now. Rashi says, this is actually not a command. Our first pasuk here in Parsha Shlach is not Hashem commanding Moshe to send them. It's Hashem giving permission to send them. According to your own judgment, if you want to send them, you can. I do not require it. In fact, Rashi uses the language that when the people came to Moshe, which is the way that chronologically it happened, the people came to Moshe and they said, we want to send spies. Moshe wasn't sure what to do, so he took counsel with Hashem. And Hashem said to them, listen, they don't need to send spies. I told them it's a good land. I told them it has everything they need, flowing with milk and honey. I'm telling you, it's fine. But if they insist on sending, I'll let them go. If they want to go, they're going to go. It's dangerous. You're taking a risk because I don't know what's going to happen when they come back. I'm okay with it. So that Rashi sees that this is not an actual command by Hashem. It's a simple giving of permission. Rashi makes a similar comment in Sefer Devarim when Moshe tells the story over and he says, and I was pleased with it. I thought it was okay. Rashi there explains similarly in the same ways. If let's say you were selling, I'll use myself. If I'm selling my car, it's a used car, and I want to sell it, and somebody comes by and says, you mind if I take it for a spin to check it out? If I say, well, no, you know what, it's not available now, so right away he's going to say, forget it. If I say to me, of course, here are the keys, take it here, take it there, you could take it onto the highways, take it up on a terrain like this, it's great, you won't have any problems. So Rashi comments, sometimes as a buyer, when you see that the seller is completely ready to have you do whatever you want, he has no hesitation whatsoever, that alone tells you it's fine, I don't even need to do it. So Rashi interprets when Moshe said to the people, I told you, I said it was a good idea, that was in that same line of thinking of, this is unnecessary. You guys, you don't need to do this. Hashem said it's a good plan. But you know what? If it puts your mind at ease, Moshe says, I said to you, it's a great idea. Let's do it. Hoping that you, the people, would respond and say, if Moshe is so confident, we don't even need to do it anyway. He's ready to send us. Let's leave it alone. So that's how Rashi sees this entire episode. So that it's really a function that the people initiated, the people wanted it, Hashem and Moshe both go along with it. It's something that was unnecessary and not needed, fraught with danger, which of course it turns out being a disaster. They gave their permission to do so. Just parenthetically, I want to point out one thing. Rashi, it's again on the, I have it on the side of your page if you see there. Rashi points out that our parsha of Shlach follows directly on the heels of the end of last week's parsha, as we discussed last week, which is the episode of Miriam and Aharon speaking Lashon Hara against Moshe. They speak derogatorily against their brother Moshe. Miriam is punished. He gets tzaras. We mentioned last week there are two opinions in the Gemara whether or not Aharon also got tzaras. And the whole camp has to wait for her to heal for a whole week. And the whole camp saw the result, the ramification of derogatory speech, of not using one's language appropriately. So Rashi comments, why is it we go straight from the end of last week's parsha to this beginning parsha of Shlach, the sending of the spies? Rashi says, to show how grievous the spies' sin was. Because here it was, they had Miriam as an example. They saw that she was punished on account of the slander that she said against her brother. They witnessed that. Velo lokhu musar. They didn't take any lesson. They didn't learn. They didn't see from that there was something wrong with that. So we put them together to show how problematic that they had something to learn with. The Maharal just adds a comment to this Rashi, and he says, because this isn't really the right place for it. Meaning the people made their request earlier. They said, send spies. And Hashem said, no, it's not the right time. I don't even give you permission. Don't do it. And they're like, we want to send spies. No. And delayed and delayed and delayed. And then after the episode of Miriam, Hashem says, now you can go. Because now you have the tools to succeed. Now you can see what happens with derogatory speech. Now I'm okay sending you because you should have what it takes to succeed and not fall prey to saying something negative. And there's a lesson in here that it's not just a matter that we sometimes need to learn from things which happen to us. You say, I'll never do that again. We need to learn that which happens to someone else too. When something happens to them, we're also responsible for saying, listen, in the world around me, something took place. I don't want that to happen to me either. Not just because it happened to me. If it happens to anyone, you're responsible for learning. And therefore, it's only after the spies learned the lesson, Jewish nation learned the lesson of a derogatory speech. Hashem says, okay, now I'll give you permission because you have what it takes. You know what it means to be able to succeed. Okay, be that as it may, that's all Rashi's approach. Again, that there was never a command to send spies. The original idea came from the people. And in our parsha, read the phrase, Shlach Lecha Anashim, not as a command, but that I am okay with it. I will give you permission if you deem it appropriate, if you want to, go ahead and send it, which is what the people do. And of course, it flops and is a terrible tragedy and calamity for the Jewish people. Rav Hirsch prefers the literal reading of the pasuk. The literal reading of the pasuk, Shlach Lecha Anashim, sounds like a command. It's a tzivoy. Hashem is telling Moshe, you must do this. As the very next pasuk says, that when Moshe sent them, he did it Al Pi Hashem. He did it by Hashem's command. It sounds like this is Hashem is telling Moshe what to do. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor shlach lecha Hashem. We find the word lecha in many different instances in the Torah in a command form. Do this, do that. So the simple reading leads us back to our question of if the people already asked for this, why is it that Hashem is then commanding them to do what they on their own already asked for and Moshe said was a good idea? And Rav Hirsch has the following brilliant idea. He says as follows. It comes down to an understanding of the two different words that were used to spy out the land. Let's go back to the original word. I'm now flipping back to Sefer Devarim. And the word in front of you on the top of your page is the people's request. That you all came forward and you said, V'yachperu lonu es ha'aretz. We want to be chofer. We want to spy out the land. Now, the word chofar, as a meaning of to spy out, has a very specific word. Lechpor means to dig. It means to uncover something. Says Rav Hirsch, they said, we need to uncover the land. We need to reveal that which is hidden. We are about to go to war, and this is an unknown entity. We don't know anything about the land. We can't go to war, we can't start a conquest without scouting out what's here. What is the terrain like? What's the best road to take? We need to reveal that which is covered to succeed. And Moshe says, Vayitav be'inayad, I thought it was a good idea. Remembering, as many commentators point out, there's a very fundamental shift about to take place as the Jews enter into the land. And that is, while they were in the desert, they were living a miraculous existence. They were living in a bubble. If there ever was a bubble world, this is it. Their food is falling from heaven. A miraculous well of water follows after them. Their clothing never wears out, never needs to be laundered. Everything is taken care of. They're learning Torah from Moshe himself, directly from Hashem. That was, if there ever was a spiritual bubble, that was it. But when they entered into the land, they were going to have to work the fields. They were going to have to plow and seed and harvest and bake and set up a government and pave roads and set up an army. It was going to be life. And the people said, as we shift into this new reality, we have to be like, you know, regular people. Let's scout it out. Vayachpor means to dig, to uncover, to bring something out into the open that previously was hidden so that we should see what it is. They are very specific. What do they want from the spies? They say, Ve'yashivo osonu davares haderech asher. Let them tell us which road to take and which cities to attack first. And Moshe says, good idea. I like it. It makes sense. And that's what we need to do. How many spies are necessary for such a mission? Whatever is necessary. How many did Yehoshua send? But when the Jews, after the 40 years are up and Moshe dies, how many does Yehoshua send when he sends spies to the first city of Jericho? He sends 2. You need 2 spies. You don't want to be too obvious. You don't want to be too big of a party. You need to be able to get in and get out and do what you need to do. So the people say, well, send spies, however many we need. What's the quality of the spy that they were going to send? Somebody who knows how to do topography and figure out, is it mountainous, is it hilly? Well, what do we need? They just said nothing about it. They didn't say how many. They didn't say who. They just said, we need somebody to dig up the land. And Moshe says it's a fine idea. However, Hashem is not happy with this mission. He says it's missing something. And therefore we get in our Parsha, back to Parsha Shlach, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'imor. Hashem speaks to Moshe and says, wait a minute, before you send these guys, I'm not okay with the way the mission exists right now, and I need to change it. And I'm going to command you as follows. Shlach lecho anashim viaturu es eretz kinan. You're not going to be a chofer. You're not going to dig up. You're going to viasuru, a different word for spying. What is the word latur es haaretz? What does that word mean? Says Rav Hirsch, as he often does, he compares it to similar words. Latur is similar to the word tafar. Tafar means to sew, which is to take 2 separate pieces and combine them into one with one function. Or to the word latur with the tet, which means to plant a row or a column. If you walk into a forest and you see random growth, you say, yeah, of course, it's natural random growth. But if you see a row of strawberries or of corn, the first thing you know right away is somebody was here and did this on purpose. Nature doesn't grow in rows like that. It grows random. If it was a tour, if it was a row, it was purposeful. Latour, to spy, is a combination of those ideas of purposeful combining of the information to understand the essence of what it is you're spying out, to understand its nature and its purpose. Let me explain with a simple parable. If you were spying out an enemy nation, so the lower level espionage of lachpor, to dig, would be you'd send spies to the nation, to the opposing army, and figure out how many soldiers do they have, what type of weapons do they have, what are their military positions. You'd spy the facts. Where are they? How many? What kind of weapons do they have? That's the lower level lachpor. I have uncovered, revealed that which they might have tried to hide from me. I revealed it. I now know their positions, their numbers, and their grade of weapon. The second level of viasuru would be, look at all of that information, put it together and understand, what is the agenda of your enemy army? What do they want to accomplish? What do they stand for? What do they want to be and what do they want to do? What strategies will they employ? Not just that I've uncovered the what, but I understand the essence from the what. Like sewing together different pieces of information to create one whole, a purposeful planting of a row of something. Look at it with intent to understand its meaning and its purpose and its inner essence. Says Rav Hirsch, Hashem says to Moshe, we're not just sending spies like a regular nation to check out the roads and the paths and understand which city. If we're going to send spies, I'm going to upgrade this mission. And I command, Shlach lecho anashim viasuru es eretz Kinaan. They are going to spy out the land of Kinaan, asher ani nosein levnei Yisrael, that I'm giving to Bnei Yisrael. Now, a couple of points. Who goes? In the people's mission, who do you send and how many? Whatever, however many you need. What type of person? Whoever can figure out topography best is who you send. Hashem says, you're going to send ish echad l'matei avosav. I need 12. I need one from each tribe, and I need quality. Kol nasi bahem. They're going to be leaders. They're going to be people of distinguished character because the essence of what they're going to do requires it. They need to now go and understand not just the nature of the land topography-wise, they need to understand the spiritual nature of the land of Israel. Hashem says to Moshe, according to Rav Hirsch, I'm about to give you the land of Israel. You're going to receive what's going to be the basis of the national development of the Jewish people. The place where Torah is supposed to be observed, where we will connect to Hashem in a way that we cannot connect anywhere else in the world. You can't just send the people in not knowing what they're going to. You can't just walk into the land of Israel and have had no background, no training, no understanding of the spiritual quality of this land and think you're going to reap the spiritual benefits of this land walking off the plane like you think you're in Hawaii. Doesn't work that way. You have to know where you are and what it is. Hashem says to Moshe, I command you, you have to send one from each shevet. Every Shevet needs a representative to go over its part of land that it's going to receive to understand the spiritual quality of the land, what it is, how you can make the most of it, how you can relate to it as our homeland of where the Jew is going to be. And therefore, it requires a certain quality of person, kol nasi behem. It has to be a person of that type of ability to be able to do so, to be able to see. It's a new mission. Not the mission the people wanted, it's the mission that they need, which is not just to see the roads and the cities, but to understand the gift they're about to get. Rav Hirsch says, look at the way that Moshe then instructs them in their questions that they need to do. They need to see. This is a classic example of how Rav Hirsch, with a magnifying glass, works through the language of the Chumash to derive his understandings. Moshe gives them a general response. He says, check out the land and the people. And then he gives them six specific questions. Five of the six questions have the word im, or in the middle of the question, meaning check it out whether it's like this or im if it's like that. So for example, but there's only one that doesn't, which Rav Hirsch notes. Now, if you're going to be looking at the English that's in front of you, the English is going to be deceiving because the translation in front of you put the word or in, despite the fact that it's missing in the Hebrew. Here says Moshe in Pasuk Yudchas, Uri Isem Es Arts Mahi V'Esa Ma Yoshevela. Go check out the land, what it is, and the nation, the world, the people that dwell in it. Hechazaku Harafeh. Whether it is they are strong, the people, or they are weak. Now, I just said the word or, but note the missing word in the Hebrew. Hechazaku harafeh. The next five are all going to have the word. Hame'atu imrav. Are they few or are they many? Question. That's question number two. Again, strong, weak. Question number two is many or few. U'maha'aras asher hu yoshev ba. What about the land? Hatovahi. Is it good? Imra'ah. Or is it bad? What about the hills? The cities, are they open or are they fortified? That question number four. Number five, Hashmeinahi im raza. Is the land fertile or is it weak? Hayesh ba'etz, are there resources? Are there forests? Are there trees? Im ayin, or are there not? All five of the questions are either like this or like that. With trees or without? With fortified cities or open cities? A fertile land or a weak land? Many or few? But the first question just says, Hechazaku harafeh. Whether it is strong, whether it is weak. Why does it veer from the normal pattern, asks Rav Hirsch. And he says as follows. Out of all of these questions, if you think about it from the perspective of the original request of the people to send spies, because we want to check it out, we're going to war, we want to be prepared, which would be the most important of all of those questions as they begin? It would be the question of, are our enemies strong or weak? We're about to go to war, that's what I want to know. Because if they're strong, I'm concerned, and if they're weak, we'll be all right. But that's the question that I want to know. Says Rav Hirsch, it's that first question, Hechazaku harafe, whether they be strong, whether they be weak, that Moshe purposely and directly wants to veer them off of that understanding of the question to say, this is not a question about whether we should attack or not attack or whether we'll be successful or not. We're all in. We're going in and we're going to be successful regardless of the answers to this question. Therefore, it's not a question. Find out if they're strong or weak. I don't care if they're strong or weak in the sense of whether or not we're going to attack. I have an entirely different meaning of this question, as Rav Hirsch explains as follows. Whether they be strong, whether they be weak. He explains it as follows. Go in and check it out. You're not taking notes for yourself and your conquest. You are going to take notes for the rest of Jewish history, that it should be recorded forever what the land was like when you got there. And I want to know every possibility. And he says it as follows. Were they weak? Was the land weak? Was there a lack of resources? Were there no trees, no forests, no way to get natural resources? Were the people small in number, unable to sustain any form of growth? Did you get there and find a land that seems inhospitable? Great. I want you to note that forever, because when you get there and the land flourishes and the land develops and blossoms and turns green with resources and wealth and riches and your nation expands and becomes strong, let it be forever recorded that the land you entered didn't naturally have any of that. It was weak and decrepit and destitute from resources. And what you see now is because that's what happens when the Jewish people come in and bring a Torah observant lifestyle to the land. Let it be known and recorded that you didn't find it this way. And then I want you to check it out, and maybe you'll find some strong nations and fortified cities. I want you to take note of that too, because you're going to vanquish them as if they're a fly on the back of your hand. And let it be noted for all time that the strength and the fortifications and the power and the wealth that you might have in this land will be nothing if you lose sight of your moral compass, like the nations that live there now. And if you don't take care of the poor and the stranger and the orphan and the widow, and you make it about your power and your might, you see what happens to them. Let it be forever recorded that the most powerful of nations lived in this land, and they were nothing when a morally superior nation came in and vanquished all of them. So Moshe says, that's the question. When I want you to go search out this land and understand it, record it for all time, whether, not either or, whether they be strong, and note how meaningless that is if morality doesn't reign supreme, whether they be weak, and the land looks weak, I want you to note how the blessing of prosperity and richness of land will come about because you're here and living a moral, superior life. You'll see how it will manifest itself in the beauty of the land. And Moshe is directing them with his question away from their initial mission of, it's a military mission. No, it's not a military mission. This is a mission to teach the Jewish people about the land they're about to enter into. We cannot enter a land if we don't understand its spiritual qualities. So you, 12, one from each tribe, people of character, I need you to go, not lachpor, not to uncover or undig up basic facts, but via suru esa'aretz. You need to spy it out and piece it all together, understand everything that it's about, and teach the Jewish people so that they can come in appropriately to what it is that the gift that we are about to receive. I just want to conclude. He has more to say on the idea of the spies, but on the idea of the word via suru, to spy out, he points out just one other thing, which is worth noting as we wrap this up. The very end of the parsha in Shlach is the parsha of tzitzis, the parsha of the command to put tzitzis on any four-cornered garment as necessary. Let me just give you the pasuk in front of you. Mm. Okay. Here it is. Okay. V'hayalachem litzitzis. And these fringes, these strings that you'll put on your garments will be for you as sitzis or risem oso. You will see them, uschartem es kol mitzvos Hashem va'asisem osam. You'll remember all the mitzvos and you will do them. V'lo sasuru acharei levavachem yacharei nechem. And you will not follow after your heart and your eyes that will otherwise lead you astray. And many of the commentators, or first amongst them, notes, in the same parsha from the beginning to the end, the same word appears. Moshe tells the people, Lasur es ha'aretz, to spy out the land. And at the end of the parsha, we put tzitzis on our garments to remember the mitzvos, not to be led astray by our hearts and by our eyes that we lust after. Now, it refers to, as I already interpreted the word latur, lasur es ha'aretz, to mean specifically not just to get facts, but to put them all together to understand the inner essence of the object that's being seen. Why is that the word that's used to say to us, don't follow your heart and your eyes and be led astray, and use tzitzis as a tool not to be able to do so? What is it, lasasuru, to put it all together? So the verse says as follows. He says, brilliant. He says, you know, everything that we see and we come across in life, we have to interpret. We have to, it's just a fact out there. And we then have to take the information, internalize it, interpret it, and make sense of it. Almost nothing has intrinsic sense unless we put it in some kind of context. Just looking at the world around us today, you know, if you go onto Fox News or CNN, they're looking at the same scene and they're seeing it completely differently because you have to interpret the facts and put it into the context of your understanding of things. So you can see a person rioting and see thugs and lawlessness, or you can see people fighting for change. You can argue whatever you want. You're just seeing a piece of information and interpreting it. You can see terrorists. You could see freedom fighters. The facts are the same. How you label them, how you see them, is completely subjective. In the most, how should I even say this? I almost want to not say this example, but it just proves the point. If you were to ask a German living in 1940, they were purifying humankind. Those were the words that they would use. Everyone else would say genocide and murder and Holocaust. And that's simply an indication of, if we don't have an anchor as to how to see the world, people, human beings on their own, will see the most different thing and interpret them in vastly different ways. Each one convinced that they're the one seeing it right and everyone else is wrong. Says Rav Hirsch, when we see things, if we were to follow our lev and our eyes, our heart and our eyes, we will be latur es haaretz. We will spy out, so to speak, the world, and everything that we see, we will allow our heart and our eyes to interpret its value. When we see something, let's take my most famous example, I use it all the time, chocolate cake. We now need to interpret the value. There's a piece of chocolate cake on my plate. Okay, so someone would say, like, what's going on right now? So, fact, there's chocolate cake on the plate in front of me. Okay, is this a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, is it a good thing or a bad thing? So I have to decide how I should proceed under the... If I'm looking from the perspective of my health, I would say, this is terrible that I now have a piece of chocolate cake in front of me. It's going to do bad things for me, and I can't. So I would say, this is bad. But most of us would see that scenario and say, geschmack, amazing, I love chocolate cake, I'm about to have a wonderful experience. What changed the definition of whether or not I see this as a disaster? How am I going to withstand this? Get me out of here versus get me a fork. You know what? Skip the fork. I'm just digging in with my... What changes that in our mind? Well, what changes is how we're looking at it. You know, which which a tool in our mind? Are we looking at it from the pleasure principle, good thing and happening? Are we looking at it from the health challenge? Says Rav Hirsch, if you allow your eye and your heart, it will be latur, which means again to take all the different pieces of information, like the spies, and understand the essence of what it is. We will look at the world. The danger is we will look at the world through our eyes and our hearts. We will interpret the events of the world, the challenges. Everything will be seen through the physical lusts that we have. And we will come to value and interpret through that the whole world. It will be like putting a pair of eyeglasses in front of us. Everything that we see will now be seen through the gratification of personal desire. And if you do that, you'll see the whole world differently. The whole world you see differently. Versus if you can take that pair of eyeglasses off and you see the world through spiritual eyeglasses. What will bring me closer to eternity? What will bring me closer to Hashem? The whole world looks different. The way you value the whole world, the way you put all the different pieces of information of what we see in the world, what is it really about? What does it really mean? What is its essence? In the same way the spies were tasked with seeing the essence of the land of Israel to train the Jewish people, before you enter this land, you need to know what it is. At the end of the parasha, the Torah uses the same word, don't allow your heart and your eyes to interpret everything that you see and give you an understanding of what the world is about. Because it will. Your eyes and heart will do so, and you will see the whole world through those eyeglasses. And that would be a tragedy, to go through life seeing it from a mundane physical pleasure principle and interpreting every event that way, rather than a spiritual principle of how do I become a better person, bring Torah into my life, and become closer to Hashem. Velo sasuru. Do not allow that overarching understanding of everything to happen through your heart and through your eyes. Says Rav Hirsch, that's why we find that same exact word at the end as we find in the beginning. And again, in his understanding, the people initiated the request and Hashem upgrades it. Hashem says, going back to what we started with, you can't send spies just to check out roads and hills. Send spies, but send people of accomplishment to give them a spiritual understanding of the gift that they're doing. That kind of mission I am okay with, and that kind of mission is indeed necessary. Unfortunately, it ends in disaster, but the lessons that we can learn from it are still very much applicable today. As always, it is a great pleasure spending some time learning with you, and I wish you all an amazing day.